Just so you guys see how ridiculous this is. This is Michelle in high heels at Topgolf. Here she goes. It's the windup and the pitch. That's actually the best, and now she's jumping. That was probably the best hit she's had. She did it for you.
Oh my God. Like, I can't even, I'm trying to sit here and think of what would be more extra at a driving range than all of what Michelle is right now.
Welcome to another episode of the 411. Let's introduce the crew. My name is Chris.
I'm Eddie.
Michelle.
Marcus.
And Diana.
All right, gang's all here. So in today's episode, we've got some fun things planned. Michelle is bringing a game. Wasn't given much details about it, other than it's a surprise. So I'm excited about that. We're going to talk rubrics, which should be an interesting topic. And then we're going to talk a little fitness. It was a big weekend, the mini marathon, and a couple of us participated in this, and we're all on sort of different journeys in our sort of fitness goals. So we'll talk about that too. So Michelle, I am excited for this game. Let's do this.
So I'm really excited to play game show host today, and the game that we're going to play is called Australian Hacksents. Chris and I have been talking recently about how terrible we are at faking an accent, and it makes me really mad. I wish that I could just nail a good accent, any accent, I don't even care. But I found online some hacks so that if you say certain words in your American accent, when they're put together, it sounds like you're saying something totally different and like you're from Australia. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to type the words out on the screen, and then each of you are going to read them out loud and then try to guess what you sound like, what you're saying in an Australian accent. If that doesn't make sense, it's going to make sense as soon as we do the first one. So Eddie, you are up first. Okay, buddy, read these words and then tell me what your Australian accent sounds like.
G'day, mate. Like, g'day, mate, right? I'm good at this game. G'day, mate.
Ding, ding, ding. Eddie got an easy one that time around. Do you guys think you understand the game so far?
I got this, and it's just other people think my accents are terrible. I think they're good. So, I've got this. But this is fun.
All right, Chris, you think you're so good. You're up next. That one is for you.
Mine's way harder. I don't even... Rise up, lights. Rise up. Rise up, lights. Rise up, lights. I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm stumped, and I don't like this. Rise up, lights.
Can we guess? Can we guess? I got it.
Go ahead.
Razor blades.
Yes, it sounds like razor blades in an Australian accent. Chris, try it again, and you'll hear it.
Rise up, lights. Rise up, lights. Yeah. Yeah. Dang it.
My face is getting redder with each round because I'm laughing so hard at you guys trying to figure this out. All right, Diana, you are next.
For those that are keeping score, that's 1 point for Marcus.
Sure, Marcus. I guess this is kind of like whose line is it anyway? The points don't matter, but good job. Diana, these right here.
To die, today to die? Like that? Today.
First of all, they get good day, mate, and today, and I get razor blades.
Rise up lights. Rise up lights. I heard it, Chris.
You said your accent was so good that I wanted to challenge you.
Michelle, give the next person a really hard one.
Deal. Marcus, your turn.
My bull fine. Dang it. My bull fine. My bull fine. Put another shrimp on the barbie. My bull fine. No idea.
Is it like maybe we'll find my bull fine? That's all I got.
No. Let me give you a hint. Shall I call you on your my bull fine?
Hello. I'll give you my Mabel Fine number.
I feel like that one's kind of a stretch.
There are too many players in this game. I had to really dig through the forums on Reddit to find something. Okay, how about... That one was a bit of a stretch. I'm going to give one more for everyone and double points for whoever guesses it. And go.
Spice rice, like space race. Spice rice.
Spice rice, space race. Space race.
And coming in hot on the buzzer, Eddie Small. Space race. That one was less of a stretch than mobile fine. My bull fine. That sounds like mobile phone in Australian.
Well done, Edward. Nice job, Chris. Darn those double points.
Thank you, Michelle. That was a lot of fun. I need a accent to sound like Jon Snow. Like, I want to sound like Jon Snow. So let's make that happen. We are to the educational portion of the 411, and we are going to talk today about rubrics. We were talking and realized we had varying viewpoints on rubrics, and so it should be a really interesting topic. So let's just get right into it. What do we think about rubrics? Good, bad, otherwise? Let's hear it.
You know, I'll jump right in. As a former project-based teacher, I'm always going to be on the side of rubrics for the good. I think it's important if they're used effectively. Now, there are some great tips out there of the do's and don'ts on rubrics. Obviously, people can research on their own, but it isn't any different than outlining expectations in your classrooms or class projects. I always just look for rubrics as a great guideline for that essential gray area in any area of a project or classroom activity.
During my years of being a high school English teacher, I certainly started teaching without using rubrics and sort of took what I knew from my own experiences as a student, both in high school and college, which was students were going to write and a teacher was going to assess that sort of holistically. And I always felt lucky if there were comments. And I sort of just grew up thinking this is the expert and what they say is a fair assessment. And I certainly started out grading writing that way. I definitely started using rubrics probably during the second half of my teaching, my in-class teaching career, and mixed results. I want to come back. I hope we continue on this road because I want to talk about what we think what we think the efficient use, Eddie said, proper or efficient use of a rubric is.
You know, a couple episodes ago, we talked about personalization and student voice and choice. And I'm not against having students understand expectations. I'm not against finding ways to take some subjectivity out of grading, certainly. But I often wonder how personalization, how giving students choice in the things that they do, meshes well with rubrics, which kind of map out very specific details about how a project is supposed to be completed. If we're giving students some autonomy in selecting the ways that they demonstrate mastery, is it reasonable to create a rubric for something as open-ended as that? And does creating a rubric kind of force students into inside of this box instead of allowing them to think outside of it?
Well, I think it, Michelle, I think it can be achieved. I also think it's really important to let students into the process of rubrics, giving them a voice in their evaluations. And I don't think I ever had the same rubric for every student. I mean, there was some variations and some differentiation in there, but I think it's important to bring them into the process. We always sat down as a group and decided, you know, if this was the final project, how they would look at the rubric differently. So we gave them that voice, that choice. They brainstormed together as a group. They collaborated on what that final project looks like in terms of what the rubric looked like. So, you know, I had a very specific set of guidelines of things I would like to see and, you know, walk them towards the path and let them then do the necessary steps to figure out, okay, as a student, how would I like to be not necessarily judged, but how would I like to see that expectation fit my mold? So I think you can do it in a rubric setting. I don't think you throw rubrics out because it doesn't give them any voice or choice. I didn't want to miscommunicate that I'm doing it from the teacher side where I create the rubric and then we just go. The students have some voice and choice in that. So I think it's important to bring them in always.
Yeah, so Eddie, to speak to that, like I love working with classes of students where we start off with just a blank Google Doc and we work together with the kids, an editable collaborative Google Doc, and the kids build the rubric. I think that's a great point. But if you've ever had to grade something with a rubric that wasn't well done, I think we've all been, I mean, I've had an experience where I've had to grade something using a rubric that I didn't necessarily love or write completely by myself, or and the kids didn't write. And I felt really limited by that. And I also think about sometimes, you know, for this example, I'll say like, you're an English teacher, you get a long paper to grade and you just like cover it with comments and you're thinking like, I'm trying to give really good feedback, right? And then the student gets back the paper, they look at the grade, they don't necessarily spend the time, you know, reading all of those comments that you spent the time to write. And I think sometimes a rubric can be a similar thing. So they're looking at this matrix and there's you know, really specific criteria in each one of those columns. And will the student take the time to read through those things? And I guess my point really here is, can we put feedback in a different place in the process that's going to be more valuable than lots of comments on a paper or a really, really wordy rubric?
So that's a really interesting point, Diana, kind of building off of what Eddie mentioned. I love the idea of including students' voice and choice in the development of the rubric. I don't like rubrics in the traditional sense. I think speaking to Diana's point about kids just looking at the grade, not reading the comments, I think rubrics, I don't want to say make it easy for a good grade, but I mean, I've seen rubrics where it's like name. They put their name on the paper, 1 point. You know, it's like it's a checklist of what has to be done, and it really stifles some creativity. And it's created a generation of students that all they are trying to do is collect points. They're not concerned about the feedback. It is, did I get an A? Because the rubric spells out exactly how to do that. You know, I think, and this could be a whole another topic on assessment and grading, but I think some of our grading practices should be kind of relooked at along with rubrics.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, both of you, because I recently read this article, and it's actually an article from 2014 by Jennifer Gonzalez, and we'll share it in the description, and we'll share it on Facebook. But she kind of shared the same sentiment, that teachers spend a great deal of time creating these densely packed rubrics. And I want you guys to think about whenever you've used a rubric as a student. Did you read through all of that information on the rubric? I know I didn't. I never once looked at what, you know, the basic column or not meeting proficiency. That was a bunch of effort by the teacher that I never looked at. I wanted to know what expectation was. And that was the column I went to. And I do think it can, if not written well, stifle creativity. But Jennifer Gonzalez in this article shared an idea for a single point rubric. And essentially, it's three columns. And the only place where you have rubric material is in that middle column. And this is meeting proficiency. So each of those criteria, you explain what proficiency looks like. And then when you give it back to the student, you actually write on either side of proficiency and or both ways that the student demonstrated going above and beyond proficiency. In one column, and you leave the feedback, and on the other side, ways that they're not quite meeting proficiency. And so this way, it really amplifies the teacher feedback, where that's the piece that's most important, and it takes away all of that unnecessary content throughout the rubric that students aren't looking at anyway. I thought it was a really interesting idea, and I think a way to kind of level up the rubric in a way that's more meaningful for students.
Michelle, you thunder stealer. I read a similar article and I was ready. I was so ready that, great minds. The 1 point rubric seems to be the happy medium. As the person grading, I felt like the traditional rubric stole my sort of expertise. It was limiting for both me and for my students, and so that's why I didn't like them. And I also understand that, like, the premise that a rubric builds a structure, it makes expectations clear, and I, to some extent, it sort of takes the onus off of the teacher. Because the teacher doesn't have to depend upon their expertise, really. They just have to depend on what's in the print. And so if there was a question about a grade, the teacher can just say, well, look right here. It's right here in the rubric. And I kind of like that 1 point process. And I love what Eddie and Diana said about letting or having students engage in the rubric. I think that is sort of next level, and that's really probably the way it ought to be. But the 1 point to me seems to be a nice spot in between those two, between the traditional and then between the student voice and created rubric. But man, gosh, I had that. That was my secret weapon.
Yeah, I think it's different for project-based teachers, especially in those fields that aren't necessarily ones that they're getting a whole lot of cross-curricular activity in. So, assuming somebody comes into a project-based class not knowing anything about the field of study that we're working in, and trying to give them those career readiness skills and tools that they need to move forward. And I think we've been in situations in our careers where we've been scored or evaluated based off of a rubric, whether it's professionally or personally. That world doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So I do think there's opportunity in the rubrics to give students some real-world experience, and that's where kind of I think we're talking about two separate things. I'm not a big proponent of rubrics in an English class, as I am rubrics in a project-based learning class. So But in making sure those details are spelled out, you know, the descriptors are there for each column if you're using them, you know, how you are ranking them, how you are rating them, and then giving them student choice. So that's kind of the final thing I'll say on it.
You know, I want to go back to something that Chris said, because this is actually my biggest issue with rubrics being used incorrectly or not effectively. So Chris said something about how, like, sometimes a rubric can become a checklist. And I love the suggestion of using that one-point rubric, because we're still looking for proficiency. We're still looking for, like, skills-based grading. And a lot of times I hear people using the word rubric when really they're talking about a checklist. And if we're creating, like, a checklist of things that a student must do, like put your name on the paper, like, those aren't... that's not in line with standards-based grading. And so I really like the idea of, you know, explaining what that proficiency looks like, and then putting that expertise, that ability for the teacher to share really authentic feedback with the student in a way that isn't just like circling a spot on a rubric.
See, Eddie, I almost disagree with you. I feel like the rubric is even worse in like project-based learning. I mean, an example, you know, if we talk about like the rules of composition, you know, so like rule of thirds, leading lines, all these different, you know, one of the rules of composition is to break all of the rules. And so there is a lot of missed opportunity for creativity and unique design and real world application when there is a little bit more freedom. And I think guidelines can be set without a rubric. I'm passionate about this.
Right, which I don't think we've ever put in a rubric. I think, like, there is, like, if you ever put creativity in a rubric and scored it 1 to 5, obviously very subjective, right? But it's in there. And it's not like we're not asking the students to not be creative because we've given them a set of guidelines. Like, that's going to be an expectation on a potential rubric or guidelines that I would hand out. So the creativity was always one of the things we talked about. How do we score that? What does that look like? And giving the students, you know, some say in that. So I'm not saying you throw creativity out the window because you've got a list of 10 things that you want them to do, and then scoring them, you know, on a scale is not the correct way to go about it. But I do think that you add those types of things in so that the expectation is there that they can be creative and they can break some of the rules and still achieve, you know, mastery in that subject.
Yeah, so getting back to what Diana said about the rubrics oftentimes or being turning into checklists, that is definitely missing the target and the intention of a rubric, certainly. And so the process of building the rubric is, I believe, as important as the final product itself. And it sounds to me, though I haven't done it in my classes, it sounds to me like what Eddie's talking about with project-based learning, that seems to me to ensure a rubric that truly measures what the intended outcome is going to be. But that is a whole other issue. Is okay, so rubrics or no rubrics, that's an argument or topic. But then we also have issue with, well, you know, how do you make a proper rubric? How do you build that? Teachers, how have we been properly trained to use the proper semantics in building a rubric that is going to be directly relevant to the skills we're trying to see with the tasks and the projects that our students are working on?
I think my questions still come back to, what does this look like in a personalized classroom? So we've addressed a little bit about how student voice and choice comes into play in designing a rubric, and I think that's an interesting idea, having students contribute to the assessment criteria. But what does this look like when students are not necessarily working on the same thing? In a truly personalized classroom, students may be determining how they demonstrate mastery. And how would you guys address that? Is it one generic rubric for everyone? Is it individual rubrics for each person? And then how do you manage that? Or is a rubric not the appropriate assessment tool in that kind of classroom?
I think the management of that would be difficult in a personal learning classroom, but I do think it can be achieved. I think we're really talking about guidelines at that point. Assessing kind of the key features that you would want to see. My experience is all project-based, guys, so I'm coming from a different area than we're all mostly used to, and I know it's a niche group, but having those key guidelines, and then, you know, maybe having space where the students show each one of those areas. I don't want to ever advocate for like grading based on key guidelines. I think that it's a good meter or range to look at when you're doing projects and project-based stuff. But a personal learning classroom, I think you can do it. I think it would have to, the management side of it may be a little bit of a nightmare with, you know, managing those key features and then having students kind of pop in and discuss each one of those individually, which if you're already doing individualized lessons and plans, I mean, maybe it's not that big a deal. But since that's not my expertise, I can't really say. I just, in my head, it's like, it might be a little bit of a nightmare for an educator.
Which is why I'm not a huge fan of rubrics, because in that voice and choice and personalized, like I think a rubric is not the best tool for the job. You're better off giving feedback, conferring and conferencing with students, and using that as sort of the guide for them to ultimately demonstrate mastery. So I would say, I've been on this team the whole time, is I don't like the rubric for it.
Just so we're clear, the conferring and conferencing with students still happened while we built a rubric. Like, that doesn't go away in a project-based environment. So, I think there are two separate issues here, and we can dive into them at another time. But yeah, that still happens. We still allow student voice and choice and creativity in project-based classrooms that effectively use a rubric as a guide.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ready to throw out the idea of rubrics. I think there's definitely still a place for them, and I think there's a way to do them well. But just to share out a couple of tools that we're a Google school, and some of my teachers have had a lot of success with Orange Slice, and also Doctopus/Goobrick for grading using rubrics in Google tools. And I've been a longtime fan of Turnitin.com using rubrics as well for grading writing. So we'll link below to those tools. Check them out.
Thank you, Diana, for sharing all those awesome resources. We did not solve world peace today. In fact, maybe I'm going to have to come at Eddie. Just kidding. Eddie, I wasn't saying that you weren't conferencing or conferring, so we're good. But I think that there's more to this, and look for rubrics part two, because this was a really good chat. So now we're going to take it into our little final piece. Marcus and I just completed the Indie Mini this weekend. Feeling a little sore, but we're all at different places sort of in our like fitness health journeys, and we've been really good support for each other. So just kind of talk through kind of where we at and where our goals are. So
I'll start just because Chris obviously talked about me in the first part of his polo, and so I can respond to him real quick, and then I'll talk about my fitness. But the great part about this PLF is that we don't have to agree on everything, and we're not just sounding boards for different ideas. Like, we do occasionally get into some controversy and mild arguments, but we respect each other and love each other all the same. So yeah, everything's cool. I am very much at the beginning stages of my journey into running, because these four amazing people in this group are all awesome runners, and they get it on a daily basis. And as somebody that is trying really hard to get not only his weight under control, but also his fitness under control, so he's around for a long, long time, has just recently started running. It is insane, and it's about a week and a half in, and things are going pretty good. I ran for the farthest I've ever ran in one time, the other day, and these guys are running minis and things like that, but I can't wait to run my first 5K this summer. I'm really excited. Michelle, I just signed up for the Colts 5K, so.
I really am enjoying kind of what we've got going on with running, and I think the value is, I mean, certainly there's health and wellness, but I think that the value for me personally is that it's kind of my release, it's my sort of therapy. So running ends up really helping me sort of mentally unwind from a day, or helps me sort of recenter, gives me time to think. So, you know, at this time of the school year, you know, the struggle can be real for a lot of people. And I think for us in this group anyway, right now, that seems to be a channel for us to sort of de-stress, decompress, get a sweat, feel good about yourself physically. But that really does translate into, you know, mental and emotional health. And it's just, you know, it's been fun. It's been really fun. And I would urge anybody who is thinking, hey, it's beautiful outside, I should do more outside, I would urge anybody to get out and just start by walking, enjoy the weather, get out there and just keep plugging away at it, because once that act becomes a routine part of your day, you start looking forward to it. And I'm seeing that with Eddie and Diana and Michelle and Chris, like all of us talk about what it is that we're supposed to accomplish today with our running, and it translates to our day-to-day work lives as well.
Well, I'll say what's been difficult for me. So I ran in high school and a little bit in college, and I was always really competitive. And what's hard is that you stop doing that, and you start really getting into things like pizza and Girl Scout cookies, like you guys saw in some of our previous episodes of the 411, and you lose some of that ability. And but I never lost my competitive spirit, and so it's always been really hard for me to get back into things because I want to be where I once was, and I'm not at this point. And so shout out to Marcus, he's made many of us like training plans, and I am getting ready to run my very first half marathon in July with Diana up in Chicago, and I'm very excited about that. But I'll say that I've been able to get back into things because I now have this team of people that we're all working towards similar goals, and that's to be healthier, to get back into running. And so the fact that whether it is virtually running at the same time together or actually getting together face to face to find a 5K, or in Chris and Marcus's instance, a half marathon last weekend. It's been really motivating. I feel like I'm part of a team again. And I feel like that's why this time around getting back at it has been sticking. So that's been really helpful for me.
So I was really excited on Friday. Michelle and I were on the same training plan for that half marathon in July. So we did 5 miles on Friday, and I felt like that was a big milestone as we work on our training. And, you know, I think what has made this so fun is having a group of people to keep you accountable. And so on Friday when I ran my 5 miles, I had my husband drive me 5 miles away from the house, because it's all like running sometimes can be like a bunch of mental games that you play with yourself. So I was like, if he drives me away, like 5 miles away, and drops me off, like I have no choice, I have to run home. So and then while I was running, I was like Facebook video chatting with my sister who lives in New York. I was Marco Poloing with this group just to like keep myself going, you know, if I just used a bunch of tools to keep myself accountable, and so I didn't like start telling myself I couldn't pull it off. And then, you know, I started thinking about like virtual runs, and I heard about, my sister actually was telling me about how there are all these virtual runs throughout the country. And there's a bunch this summer that are all Jurassic Park themed. And so, I was trying to get the group to participate with me, in a virtual run. And a virtual run basically is like, just like a typical run, 5K race, whatever, you would sign up online, you get your bib and everything. But the difference is that you don't actually go to a starting line with a group of people. You run wherever you want, outside, on a treadmill, whatever, and then you submit your time online. So I would love to do a Jurassic Park virtual run with 411 crew and anyone out there who's interested. So what do you guys think about that?
All I want to do is this Jurassic Park virtual run. Please, let's get on board and just do it. We'll do one. Can we just do one?
You get a t-shirt and a medal. That's why I do races. For a good t-shirt and a medal that says I did it. So they give you that. They send that to me in the mail. I'm in. Let's do this.
And Michelle, did you see on the Colts 5K that they have a virtual run option? Now, you don't get the preseason ticket, but they give you a virtual run option. So it's a thing. So don't anybody pop in here and say, that's not a thing. No one does that. The Colts are going to do it.
Count me in.
I was not a fan of the virtual run. But a 411 virtual run, that's a concept.
I like that response, Chris, because it was going to end up being you saying no to everything. Ah, my Australian accent was awful. I got the hard one. Oh, rubrics. Boo. Virtual runs. No.
So basically a typical Tuesday in the 411. That's what I'm hearing.
Set him up to be negative Nancy.
What I put up with. So mean. Well, that was a fun episode of the 411. I'm proud of all of you guys for all you've done with your fitness journeys. And we don't necessarily agree on rubrics, and that's okay. And I feel like my accent game got a little bit stronger. Winter is coming. I want to be Jon Snow. Have a good one.
Anyone out there who loves to run or is looking to get into running, if you want to join us on those Jurassic Park virtual runs this summer, link below. We could all run together.
And that's the 411.